Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. This is the second quarter 2015 equity overview. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, we've been busy making charts, and if you will link to the commentary that has our second quarter equity overview charts in it, it'll help tremendously if you follow along. And I'm just going to run down and give you a sense of the second quarter. The second quarter was really the great shrink. We had a strong first quarter, particularly in the emerging markets in Asia and in Europe, and not so much the United States, which is flat for the year. But we saw both Germany and China up more than 25%, and now back down to approximately 12% each, with the U.S. flat. So there was a lot of excitement about gains in the first quarter and a lot of sadness about giving up about half of those gains in the second quarter. But we ended up the year in a reasonable place, particularly in the developed markets in China. So let's roll through the charts. The first gives an overview of all the different charts we're going to show, many of the charts we're going to show. I shouldn't say all, we're going to show more than that. The first chart, individual chart, is the U.S. dollar index. After being up 12% last year, we headed up to another a little bit more than 10% in the first quarter, and then have corrected down to end the second quarter up about 5.5%. We're up a little bit more from then now today, with the U.S. dollar index at about 96. Let's take a look at U.S. equities. The U.S. equity market was flat, but interestingly enough, the subperformer was large caps and the buyback shares, and the stocks that did well were the small caps and the medium caps. And part of that is you're seeing technology is one of the stronger sectors. If you look at the Morningstar sectors, this looks at global sectors. Real estate was strongest. In the U.S., we really saw healthcare. Again, Obamacare is providing massive subsidy to the corporate side of this market, and now we're starting to see the mergers of the insurance companies. You know, we may end up with a single payer anyway, but the mergers going on, with the Supreme Court case being final, are quite interesting. And then I also put up a picture from a Motif Investing, which I think has some very clever ideas and ways of looking at the market, and it shows that the top spot was battling cancer again more, and a lot of drugs you can see in Obamacare in the healthcare sector. So healthcare leading the way, with technology helping. I've talked a lot about the extent to which I believe the administration is doing everything they can to juice the single family home market. And sure enough, home construction outperformed the S&P, the S&P flat, and the U.S. home construction ETF up a little bit more than 6%. Real estate, of course, sunk as they were concerned about interest rates. To my surprise, oil did not really do anything. If you look at the energy sector, it was solar that had a significant performance this year. And oil's just been bouncing along the bottom and flat, and the chart looks weak. Interestingly enough, despite the oil card still being in effect, Russia came up very strongly, up 24% for the year, which, you know, is far from everything they lost last year, but a significant recovery, bringing some back. As I said, Germany was up more than 25%, then back down to 11% for the first half. And China large caps up over 25%, and then back down to approximately 11%. And the A shares, China A shares, even better performance, up at 23%. Of course, they've come down very dramatically in June. And then India came up with China up about 26-27%. India, or the large Chinese large caps, China was up about 12.5% and then really sunk and has recovered. So it's up about 3% for the first half. Emerging markets were doing nicely, up almost 12%, and now have sunk down to essentially flat for the first half. The developed markets outperforming the U.S., the international developed markets, the EFA ETF up about 4.5% for the first half, and the frontier markets sunk. They're down 4%. I just want to touch on fixed income a little bit because the big turn in the bond market truly does finally appear to be here. And we have many experts in the second quarter declaring the end of the long-term bull in the bond market. More bad behavior from Bill Gross. And real concern is the Fed jawboned about raising interest rates. The question is, will they before the end of the year? My guess is yes, although it'll be by tiny amounts. But if you take a look at the fixed income charts that I show ETFs for the a bond aggregate, then the 5 to 7 year intermediate treasury, and then the long treasury TLT. And what you see is bonds were down a tiny bit. I would call that essentially flat for the year, but the long treasuries down about 7% they were. And the long side of the market, once everybody decides that bonds are going to turn, the long bond market is going to be in a real pickle. I noticed Morgan Stanley announced last week that they're adding capacity to their fixed income markets. That's a good sign because liquidity is going to be an issue. Commodities, precious metals continue to underperform, and the charts look weak, essentially flat or down for the year so far. And same thing with the commodities index, essentially bounced around, but flat for the year. I wanted to take a look just because I did spend some time in the second quarter down in Australia and New Zealand. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's happening in those equity markets. As I'm traveling around the world, I want to make sure I report to you on equity markets around the world because they're growing. And investors are getting much more opportunity to invest in markets around the world. And I think it's very important to connect what's going on in the political news and geopolitics with what's happening in the stock market and what they mean to each other. So I've done three charts that's a comparison of several things. First of all, the Australia ETF. The second is the New Zealand ETF. I find ETFs to be very useful to just compare performance in a particular market. I would note that if we instead use their exchange index, which I sometimes do, I use the DAX in Germany, but if we use their exchange index, we get different numbers than if we use the ETF. So you just want to be cognizant of that when you look at some of these charts. So I use Australia ETF and New Zealand ETF and compare them to the international developed ETF, which is EFA, which I would consider their benchmark, and S&P. Now, Australia is very commodities dependent, and their tremendous economic boom over the last two decades has really come from providing commodities to China and the rise of Asia. I mean, they're very strategically located down under. And that has been a boon. And of course, New Zealand is a real agricultural center. And of course, they're providing meat and dairy and all sorts of food to that boom, as well as to the countries around the world. If you love lamb as much as I do, I'm sure you've eaten New Zealand lamb. It's everywhere. Anyway, so they have very interesting economies. And before we go through these charts, let me just talk a little bit about it. Australia and New Zealand compared to the United States and markets that you and I are used to are tiny. Australia's 24 million people compared to, say, our 320 million people. Their landmass is 90% of the U.S. And 40% of those people live in Sydney and Melbourne. So you have two coastal cities that have a very significant portion of the population. It's a highly urbanized population. Their stock market is about $1.6 trillion. So that's 2% of the global $70 trillion. Sydney has become a financial center, but it's nowhere near as significant as a city of London or New York City, if you will. But it's still pretty sizable. A lot of it represents commodities and the banks that serve the commodities industry. What's very interesting, you know, because when you go to Australia, it's amazing how happy everybody is, certainly in comparison to the United States. If you use the World Bank per capita and statistics, one of the reasons you can see is the per capita income in the United States is $53,000 as of 2013. It's $67,000 in Australia, which means if you looked at those numbers for 1990, we were $23,000, they were $18,000. So they were behind and they have surpassed us by a significant amount, which is one of the reasons I suspect that they're so happy. In no sense have they gutted the middle class the way we have in America, and it very much shows up in the per capita numbers. Now, of course, they have the advantage of being down under to an Asia that's rising and growing and with demands for their services and skills. And they have a very sophisticated managerial and legal infrastructure, which works to their advantage, and obviously a very beautiful country. Long supply lines, but protected by those oceans. At the same time, they depend on the U.S. Navy and the U.S. security umbrella to protect those, you know, those long supply lines. And what's interesting is in 2014, they outsourced big systems in their defense infrastructure to Lockheed Martin. If you look at the defense contractors running the United States, it's starting to look very similar down under. New Zealand is 4.6 million people. Their stock market is 75 billion, which means it's 1% of 1% of the global stock market. It's tiny. Their real economic juggernaut is agriculture. But they're also, like Australia, an incredibly beautiful country. If you've ever seen The Lord of the Rings, it really is that beautiful. It's quite remarkable and very active, healthy, outgoing people. The food and the lifestyle in both places is unbelievably healthy, very athletic. Now, these markets compare to the Asian markets. Let me give you a sense. China is 8% of 8.6% of global markets. Their markets are about 6 trillion in size. And Japan is about 6.5%. So clearly, you know, Australia and New Zealand are small, not just in the United States, but in comparison to the sort of the big guys in Asia. So let's take a look at the charts. I posted three charts. One, again, comparison of Australia with New Zealand and the developed international and S&P. And I looked at it 10 years, 5 years, and year to date. What you see on the 10-year is that with the commodities boom coming into the crash in 2008-2009, Australia was way ahead of the S&P during that period. You really had the sort of commodity super cycle. Then we get the crash. Australia comes out of the crash much stronger than the U.S. That's when the New Zealand ETF got created. It's trading a little bit ahead of the S&P. And then we move towards the 2013 period, and sure enough, the U.S. starts pulling away ahead of all markets globally, and commodities soften, and you see Australia and New Zealand move down. But you also see the developed markets not doing anywhere as well. And so, again, it's this idea that we've talked about on the equity overviews for the last several years of how astonishing the push of the U.S. markets ahead of most other markets have been for these last few years. Now, with the U.S. markets flat this for the first half of the year, what we're seeing is the other markets, in many respects, start to catch up. The next chart is the five-year picture, and I just wanted to look a little bit more closely at the last 5 years. And with this picture, you start to see the that move ahead clearly in the beginning or sort of the second quarter of 2013. It's been quite an astonishing divergence for the U.S. And again, as I said in the other recording we did for the second overview on the risk issues, a lot of that growth has depended on earnings coming out of borrowing at very low interest rates and using the money to do buybacks. And while that's pushed the market up, it's also, I would say, weakened the real asset base of a lot of companies more than we might otherwise prefer. Then if you take a look at year-to-date, what's, as I said, the New Zealand and Australia has been struggling with the low commodity prices and the slowdown in the global economy. And then you really see them turn down in the second quarter, New Zealand in particular. So we see the U.S. essentially flat for the year, and Australia down 4%, and New Zealand down almost 13%, hit quite hard, with the developed international up 5%+. So they're significantly underperforming the benchmarks, and part of that, of course, is the commodities issues. New Zealand getting hit pretty hard with low dairy prices because dairy is a very important export for them. So one of the reasons I wanted to take a look at these particular markets at this time is because they've been hit so hard by the slow commodities and the global slowing, they're down, and I'm very interested in looking for opportunities to buy. Coming into the 2008 period, I worked with brokers who specialized in getting great dividend and great interest-paying stocks and bonds. Australia and New Zealand continue to pay out much higher interest rates internally than we do, and so their bonds have always been attractive, and the high dividend yielding stocks have been attractive as well. And there's some excellent companies with very strong dividends that make them attractive. What's tricky about it is the currencies can swing quite wildly against the U.S. dollar. And as a result, not just the value of the stocks, but the value of the dividend flow can get absolutely hammered by the currency swings. But it works both ways. If you can buy when markets are down and the currency is down against the U.S. dollar, and then it turns around, of course, it can be particularly glorious. So I've been very interested in watching them and looking for opportunities, both on the currency and the stock, to take advantage. Because, again, the secret to good investing is to buy something of very high quality when they're at their worst moment. So I'm very keen on keeping an eye on their worst moment. And again, I think there's a lot about the long-term fundamentals on Australia and New Zealand that make them very particularly attractive. One of the caveats on that is a very interesting thing that a cab driver said to me when I was going to the airport in Sydney to leave Australia. He said, let's face it, we're all, whether Australia, New Zealand, anybody in the Anglo-American Alliance, we're all under the umbrella of the United States security arrangements, and the U.S. is blowing it. So if they don't get their act together and turn around, we're all in trouble. And I thought that was a very astute comment and typical of I find of international cab drivers. They know a lot. We have a second part of this quarter's equity overview. I've done a brief summary called Unpacking Risk Issues, which we recorded separately, and that was because we were getting so many questions and concerns and risk issues. I thought that would really contribute to our discussion, and rather than handle it and ask Catherine, we've prepared a special written overview and audio. So if you haven't heard that, I would really recommend that you link to that. So ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the second quarter equity overview part one. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I wish you good luck and good hunting.